I'm from New Hampshire, and New Hampshire, beginning last September, became involved with the Council for State Governments and the Pew Center to look at justice reinvestment in New Hampshire. And I want to talk about what has happened since September. But before that, I want to give you a little background on New Hampshire and where we stood when we started our initial efforts at justice reinvestment. New Hampshire is a very rural state. It's about 1.4 million. Our largest city is 120,000. So we're kind of like a drop in the bucket of the states here. It is considered the safest state in the nation. And it is an extremely frugal state. There is no income tax. There is no sales tax. Any political candidate who doesn't take the no new tax pledge stands a good chance of losing when they run for office. So as a result of that, we have seen a great deal of decline in community services and mental health programs that are available in our communities. We have also seen a significant decline in the number of programs that are available to inmates at our New Hampshire state prisons. Simply the lack of money, no revenue coming in, so all of these programs are declining. And we're a bifurcated system. We have a state prison system, and we also have 10 independent county jails that don't have any working relationship with the prison. So if you are in a jail population, it depends on what county or what part of the state you are as to whether you get any kind of services whatsoever, either in the jail facility or out in the community. So crime rate in New Hampshire has been stable for the past 10 years, but over the past 10 years, our prison population has increased 31%. So they're 31% with no new crimes, and the cost over that same period has doubled. And because of all of those things, we had very significant concerns on all branches of government in terms of what are we going to do about correction costs and why are we seeing this increase in the corrections population. There were a number of groups looking at it. In fact, when the Council of State Government came in to look at justice reinvestment in New Hampshire, one of the concerns was that there were actually too many people looking at this. There were too many groups that were trying to find solutions, and there was a concern that people were starting to work at cross purposes. So we needed to get a statewide effort focused on corrections spending and corrections policy. So one of the things, New Hampshire is a truth in sentencing state, which means that a person who is sentenced to prison is required to serve their full minimum sentence. They do not earn good time off that minimum sentence, but they are required to serve the full minimum. And then anything beyond that is determined by our parole board. So one of the things that our legislature was looking at in terms of how to deal with correction spending was to eliminate truth in sentencing so that the prison population would go down. People wouldn't be spending as much time in prison. But there was a significant outcry with that, saying, why are you going to cut people and ship them out to the community when there is absolutely no support in the community for these folks? There is. New Hampshire spends $0 on community support for probationers and parolees. There is nothing in the community other than the probation and parole officers themselves who provide supervision. So it was decided that truth in sentencing was not something that we could eliminate at this point. It didn't make policy sense, because if we send these people out and there's no support for them, the likelihood is that we're just going to see people recidivating. So what really, we were in a chicken and the egg situation. We knew we had to cut community, cut corrections cost, but at the same time, we were fearful of just eliminating or cutting the prison populations and sending these people into the community where there was no support for them, where we knew that people were coming out with significant mental health and substance abuse treatment problems, but there was nothing in the community to support them. And that was where we were in the beginning of last year, was everyone in the government was recognizing that we had to do something, but there was absolutely no agreement on how to get it done, how to reduce spending and keep our safe state. In March of 2009, a representative from the Council of State Governments came to New Hampshire to talk about the process of justice reinvestment, looking at how to shift your cost and allocate more effectively. And at that meeting, it happened that we had the president of the Senate, the Speaker of our House, I believe the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court was there, and legal counsel for the governor. And all of them listened to this presentation and thought, this is something we really need to do in New Hampshire. And within 4 months' time, we had a bipartisan interbranch group that got together and worked very hard to have the Council for State Governments and the Pew Center provide a grant to New Hampshire so that we could have a justice reinvestment study in New Hampshire. And that happened, and we had people on the ground in September. So this was a very quick decision on our part, and Pew was wonderful in agreeing to support our efforts. And it was agreed that our goals would be to reduce correction spending while increasing public safety, but that there be no change to truth in sentencing. And politically, it was decided that it made more sense to, instead of looking at the front end and trying to divert people away from prison, which obviously is a very good goal in and of itself, but politically it was decided that it was going to be more viable if we looked and focused on the back end of correction system, looking at who is in the correction system and when they leave the prisons, how are they being dealt with? How can we keep people out of prison once they've been released? So what the justice reinvestment process is that there is a group of people that come in and do very extensive data analysis in the state. They then put that analysis together and come up with policy options for the states to follow and then assist in the implementation of any policy options. We had a team of people come in, start in September, did a very intense data mining of our corrections data, and also did a series of stakeholder focus groups in New Hampshire. We pulled together groups from a variety of different places, including law enforcement, prosecutors, county attorneys, the probation parole officers, which I'm going to call PPOs, victim advocates, crime victims, mental health and behavioral health associates and professionals, county jail superintendents, we had people from the courts. And there were focus groups with each one of these groups of stakeholders to identify what they saw as the issues relating to corrections populations coming back into the community and also what was driving the cost and what was driving the prison population increases. And there are a number of findings that were very significant for our policy direction, and I'll just go over a couple of those with you. It was recognized that admissions for new crimes were stable. So our crime rate had been stable, and so had admissions for new crimes. We weren't seeing any growth there. What we were seeing was a growth in the number of people that were recidivating, people that were coming back on probation and parole violations. It turned out that we had 57% of our new admissions were probation and parole violations. So that's a huge number. And that was the big driver for our prison population growth. Also, we saw that the number of people that were being released and still on probation and parole had almost doubled over the time period of 8 years. And when people were leaving prison, there was no way, no established assessment process to determine who was at high risk for recidivating. So people were leaving the prison system and going on to probation and parole, and there was no assessment being done of who was someone who needed a great deal of community supervision and who really didn't need a lot of community supervision. As a result, our PPOs were really focusing on all of their probation and parolees with the same amount of effort and really not allocating their effort to the people who needed supervision the most. We also looked at parole setbacks. When people were violated on parole and they were sent back to prison, most of the revocations occurred within 8 months. So that seemed to be the critical time period for someone who was not going to succeed in the community was 8 months. And once they got back to prison, they were in prison for an average of 10 to 11 months. And they sat in what we call the reception and diagnostic unit. They were not in a unit that provided any programming, so people were pulled back from the community into prison, and no programming was done to help them move back out and be successful in the community. And it was also discovered that about 75% of the people that were coming back, recidivating, were there because they were either, it was a result of mental health problems or drug substance abuse problems. Those were the causes of recidivation. So they were coming back into the prison because of substance abuse and mental health problems, and there was nothing for them once they got back in. And finally, another thing that became very apparent during the data gathering was that there was nothing in the community to provide intermediate sanctions for people on parole and probation. So if someone violated their conditions of probation or parole, the PPOs had two options. They either kind of ignore it and say, bad boy, or they violate the person and send them back to prison. There was nothing available for these PPOs to encourage people, incentivize good behavior in the community. So those were the things that those were some of the things that the findings of justice reinvestment people came up with, and then came up with policy options. And one thing I want to talk about here is when justice reinvestment folks, the team, came into New Hampshire, it was required that we have a leadership team in New Hampshire of policymakers who were going to work with the data analysts as they mined their data and talked about these policy options. It was an ongoing dialogue. So we had a leadership team that consisted of all the major policy decision makers in the state. That included the president of the Senate, the Speaker of the House, legal counsel for the governor, the attorney general, the chief justice of our court system, and they sat down with the data analyst on a regular basis to talk about what kinds of information was being discovered. They could talk to the analyst and say, well, this doesn't appear to be correct. We think that you need to focus on a certain area. So there was an ongoing dialogue to make sure that what the data was showing was actually what we thought was happening in New Hampshire. And one of the good things about that ongoing dialogue was that the policy options that were developed really came as part of that dialogue. The data analysts and the folks who came in and were recommending positions or policies that we should take, this didn't come at the end of a long period of research where there was no communication between the analysts and the policymakers, but there was this ongoing dialogue. So everyone knew the directions that we were going. And some of the policy options that were recommended and have, in fact, been enacted into legislation were one that we focus our community supervision on those who are at high risk of recidivating. And so it requires the Department of Corrections to establish an assessment program so that any person who is going on to probation or parole is going to be assessed using an objective assessment tool to assess them for their risk of recidivating. And those on high risk of recidivating are going to require the most and intensive supervision. Those who are low risk and medium risk are going to be covered under a much less a much shorter period of probation or parole active supervision, and then put on what we'll call a monitoring status so that the PPOs can focus their efforts on the population that needs it the most. Another option that has been recommended was the development of swift and certain sanctions in the community for violations. So it requires, our legislation now requires the Department of Corrections to establish programs in the community, a 7-day residential treatment facility that will allow people who are violating their parole conditions to go into a facility in the community for 7 days so that they don't go back and spend 10 or 11 months in the prison. every effort is made to try and keep the people in the community where they can maintain jobs, if need, jobs and housing. Another policy option is that nonviolent offenders will now serve no more than 120% of their minimum. We found that there were people who were sitting in prison, they'd served their minimum sentence, and they were not released because either they had not participated in the programming that they were supposed to, their disciplinary conduct may have kept them back. But it was a substantial cost. People were there for an average of 500 days more than their minimum sentence. So the policy option was to make sure that people get out, nonviolent offenders get out at 120% of their minimum. And finally, another policy option, which was all agreed on, was the reinvestment of money. As we decrease the correction population by these efforts, by making sure that people have more strict supervision if they need it in the community, and getting people out more quickly, the money that we are going to save from that is going to be reinvested in community services. Now, it was decided that politically that policy option could not be implemented in legislation. So we have a bill that went through the state and went through the House and has passed that sets out all of these things that the Department of Corrections needs to do and probation and parole. But the funding piece, the critical reinvestment piece, is something that is not in our legislation. And the reason for that was because nothing was passing our legislature this year if it had any kind of additional funding. So when we went and testified on this piece of legislation, we had to make very clear that this process will only succeed and reach the goal of reducing spending while maintaining public safety if the legislature was committed to reinvesting that money in the future. And the current legislature assured us that they would go along with that and that that money would be reinvested. I don't know. We have elections every 2 years in New Hampshire. Who knows what elections are going to bring this fall and whether we're going to have a similar group of legislators who are similarly committed to this reinvestment process. But now New Hampshire has these policy options in place, and we are just on the stages of implementing it. So I would like to say that I could come back in 2 years and tell you that we have drastically reduced our prison population and that we're not seeing the kinds of recidivism that we're now seeing. But we are on the cusp of all of that right now. So John will speak next, and Michigan is much further along in the process, and I think that he can tell you how these policy options have worked out. Thank you.